Listening Library presents The Tale of Despero, being the story of a mouse, a princess, some soup, and a spool of thread, by Kate DiCamello. Read for you by Graham Malcolm. The world is dark, and light is precious. Come closer, dear listener. You must trust me. I am telling you a story. Book the First. A Mouse is Born. Chapter 1. The Last One. This story begins within the walls of a castle with the birth of a mouse. A small mouse. The last mouse born to his parents, and the only one of his litter to be born alive.
"Where are my babies?"
said the exhausted mother when the ordeal was through.
"Show to me my babies."
The father mouse held the one small mouse up high. "There is only this one," he said. "The others are dead."
"Mon Dieu, just the one mouse baby?"
"Just the one. Will you name him?"
"All of that work for nothing," said the mother.
She sighed.
"It is so sad. It is such a disappointment."
She was a French mouse who had arrived at the castle long ago in the luggage of a visiting French diplomat. Disappointment was one of her favourite words. She used it often. "Will you name him?" repeated the father.
"Will I name him? Will I name him? Of course I will name him. But he will only die, like the others. Oh, so sad. Oh, such the tragedy."
The mouse mother held a handkerchief to her nose and then waved it in front of her face. She sniffed.
"I will name him, yes. I will name this mouse Despero, for all the sadness, for the many despairs in this place. Now, where is my mirror?"
Her husband handed her a small shard of mirror. The mouse mother, whose name was Antoinette, looked at her reflection and gasped aloud.
"Toulez!" she said to one of her sons. "Get for me my makeup bag. My eyes are a fright."
While Antoinette touched up her eye makeup, the mouse father put Despero down on a bed made of blanket scraps. The April sun, weak but determined, shone through a castle window and from there squeezed itself through a small hole in the wall and placed one golden finger on the little mouse. The other, older mice children gathered around to stare at Despero.
"His ears are too big," said his sister, Merlot. "Those are the biggest ears I've ever seen."
"Look," said a brother named Furlough.
"His eyes are open."
"Pa, his eyes are open. They shouldn't be open."
It is true. Despero's eyes should not have been open. But they were. He was staring at the sun, reflecting off his mother's mirror. The light was shining onto the ceiling in an oval of brilliance, and he was smiling up at the sight.
"There's something wrong with him," said the father. "Leave him alone."
Despero's brothers and sisters stepped back, away from the new mouse.
"This is the last,"
proclaimed Antoinette from her bed.
"I will have no more mice babies. They are such the disappointment. They are hard on my beauty. They ruin for me my looks. This is the last one. No more."
"The last one," said the father. "And he'll be dead soon. He can't live. Not with his eyes open like that." But, listener, he did live. This is his story. Chapter 2. Such a Disappointment. Despero Tilling lived. But his existence was cause for much speculation in the mouse community.
"He's the smallest mouse I've ever seen," said his Aunt Florence. "It's ridiculous. No mouse has ever, ever been this small, not even a tilling."
She looked at Despero through narrowed eyes, as if she expected him to disappear entirely.
"No mouse," she said again. "Ever."
Despero, his tail wrapped around his feet, stared back at her.
"Those are some big ears he's got, too," observed his Uncle Alfred. "They look more like donkey ears, if you ask me."
"They are obscenely large ears," said Aunt Florence.
Despero wiggled his ears. His Aunt Florence gasped.
"They say he was born with his eyes open," whispered Uncle Alfred.
Despero stared hard at his uncle.
"Impossible," said Aunt Florence. "No mouse, no matter how small or obscenely large-eared, is ever born with his eyes open. It simply isn't done."
"His pa, Lester, says he's not well," said Uncle Alfred. Despero sneezed. He said nothing in defence of himself. How could he? Everything his aunt and uncle said was true. He was ridiculously small. His ears were obscenely large. He had been born with his eyes open. And he was sickly. He coughed and sneezed so often that he carried a handkerchief in one paw at all times. He ran temperatures. He fainted at loud noises. Most alarming of all, he showed no interest in the things a mouse should show interest in. While his larger, older siblings ate, Despero stood with his head cocked to one side, holding very still. "Do you hear that sweet, sweet sound?" he said.
"I hear the sound of cake crumbs falling out of people's mouths and hitting the floor," said his brother, Toulez. "That's what I hear."
"No," said Despero. "It's something else. It sounds like, honey."
"You might have big ears," said Toulez, "but they're not attached right to your brain. You don't hear honey. You smell honey. When there's honey to smell, which there isn't." "Son," barked Despero's father, "snap to it. Get your head out of the clouds and hunt for crumbs."
"Please," said his mother, "look for the crumbs. Eat them to make your mamma happy. You are such a skinny mouse. You are a disappointment to your mamma." "Sorry," said Despero.
He lowered his head and sniffed the castle floor. But, listener, he was not smelling. He was listening with his big ears to the sweet sound that no other mouse seemed to hear. Chapter 3. Once Upon a Time. Despero's siblings tried to educate him in the ways of being a mouse. His brother Furlough took him on a tour of the castle to demonstrate the art of scurrying. "Move side to side," instructed Furlough, scrabbling across the waxed castle floor. "Look over your shoulder all the time, first to the right, then to the left. Don't stop for anything." But Despero wasn't listening to Furlough. He was staring at the light pouring in through the stained glass windows of the castle. He stood on his hind legs and held his handkerchief over his heart and stared up, 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 into the brilliant light.
"Furlough," he said, "what is this thing? What are all these colours? Are we in heaven?"
"Cripes," shouted Furlough from a far corner. "Don't stand there in the middle of the floor talking about heaven. Move! You're a mouse, not a man. You've got to scurry."
"What?"
said Despero, still staring at the light. But Furlough was gone. He had, like a good mouse, disappeared into a hole in the moulding. Despero's sister, Merlot, took him into the castle library, where light came streaming in through tall, high windows and landed on the floor in bright yellow patches.
"Here," said Merlot, "follow me, small brother, and I will instruct you on the fine points of how to nibble paper."
Merlot scurried up a chair and from there hopped onto a table on which there sat a huge, open book.
"This way, small brother," she said, as she crawled onto the pages of the book.
And Despero followed her from the chair to the table to the page.
"Now then," said Merlot, "this glue here is tasty, and the paper edges are crunchy and yummy, like so."
She nibbled the edge of a page and then looked over at Despero.
"You try," she said. "First a bite of some glue, and then follow it with a crunch of the paper. And these squiggles, they are very tasty."
Despero looked down at the book, and something remarkable happened. The marks on the pages, the squiggles, as Merlot referred to them, arranged themselves into shapes. The shapes arranged themselves into words, and the words spelled out a delicious and wonderful phrase. "Once upon a time."
"What?"
said Merlot.
"Nothing."
"Eat,"
said Merlot.
"I couldn't possibly," said Despero, backing away from the book. "Why?"
Said Despero,
"it would ruin the story."
"The story? What story?"
Merlot stared at him. A piece of paper trembled at the end of one of her indignant whiskers.
"It's just like Pa said when you were born. Something is not right with you."
She turned and scurried from the library to tell her parents about this latest disappointment. Despero waited until she was gone, and then he reached out and with one paw touched the lovely words, "Once upon a time." He shivered. He sneezed. He blew his nose into his handkerchief. "Once upon a time," he said aloud, relishing the sound. And then, tracing each word with his paw, he read the story of a beautiful princess and the brave knight who serves and honours her. Despero did not know it, but he would need, very soon, to be brave himself. Have I mentioned that beneath the castle there was a dungeon? In the dungeon there were rats. Large rats. Mean rats. Despero was destined to meet those rats. Listener, you must know that an interesting fate, sometimes involving rats, sometimes not, awaits almost everyone, mouse or man, who does not conform. Chapter 4. Enter the Pea. Despero's brothers and sisters soon abandoned the thankless task of trying to educate him in the ways of being a mouse. And so Despero was free. He spent his days as he wanted. He wandered through the rooms of the castle, staring dreamily at the light streaming in through the stained glass windows. He went to the library and read over and over again the story of the fair maiden and the knight who rescued her. And he discovered, finally, the source of the honey-sweet sound. The sound was music. The sound was King Philip playing his guitar and singing to his daughter, the Princess Pea, every night before she fell asleep. Hidden in a hole in the wall of the princess's bedroom, the mouse listened with all his heart. The sound of the king's music made Despero's soul grow large and light inside of him.
"Oh," he said, "it sounds like heaven. It smells like honey."
He stuck his left ear out of the hole in the wall so that he could hear the music better, and then he stuck his right ear out so that he could hear better still. And it wasn't too long before one of his paws followed his head, and then another paw, and then, without any real planning on Despero's part, the whole of him was on display, all in an effort to get closer to the music. Now, while Despero did not indulge in many of the normal behaviours of mice, he did adhere to one of the most basic and elemental of all mice rules. Do not ever, under any circumstances, reveal yourself to humans. But the music, the music. The music made him lose his head and act against the few small mouse instincts he was in possession of, and because of this he revealed himself. And in no time at all he was spied by the sharp-eyed Princess Pea.
"Oh, Papa," she said, "look, a mouse."
The king stopped singing. He squinted. The king was near-sighted. That is, anything that was not right in front of his eyes was very difficult for him to see.
"Where?"
said the king.
"There,"
said the Princess Pea. She pointed.
"That, my dear, is a bug, not a mouse. It is much too small to be a mouse."
"No, no, it's a mouse."
"A bug," said the king, who liked to be right.
"A mouse,"
said the pea, who knew that she was right. As for Despero, he was beginning to realize that he had made a very grave error. He trembled, he shook, he sneezed, he considered fainting.
"He's frightened," said the pea. "Look, he's so afraid he's shaking. I think he was listening to the music. Play something, Papa."
"A king? Play music? For a bug?"
King Philip wrinkled his forehead.
"Is that proper, do you think? Wouldn't that make this into some kind of topsy-turvy, wrong-headed world if a king played music for a bug?"
"Papa, I told you, he's a mouse," said the pea. "Please?"
"Oh, well, if it will make you happy, I, the king, will play music for a bug."
"A mouse," corrected the pea.
The king adjusted his heavy gold crown. He cleared his throat. He strummed the guitar and started to sing a song about stardust. The song was as sweet as light shining through stained glass windows, as captivating as the story in a book. Despero forgot all his fear. He only wanted to hear the music. He crept closer, and then closer still, until, listener, he was sitting right at the foot of the king. Chapter 5. What Furlough Saw. The Princess P looked down at Despero. She smiled at him, and while her father played another song, a song about the deep purple falling over sleepy garden walls, the princess reached out and touched the top of the mouse's head. Despero stared up at her in wonder. The pea, he decided, looked just like the picture of the fair maiden in the book in the library. The princess smiled at Despero again, and this time Despero smiled back, and then something incredible happened. The mouse fell in love. Listener, you may ask this question. In fact, you must ask this question. Is it ridiculous for a very small, sickly, big-eared mouse to fall in love with a beautiful human princess named P? The answer is yes. Of course it's ridiculous. Love is ridiculous. But love is also wonderful and powerful. And Despero's love for the Princess P would prove, in time, to be all of these things. Powerful, wonderful, and ridiculous. "You're so sweet," said the princess to Despero. "You're so tiny." As Despero looked up at her adoringly, Furlough happened to scurry past the princess's room, moving his head left to right, right to left, back and forth. "Cripes!" said Furlough. He stopped. He stared into the princess's room. His whiskers became as tight as bowstrings. What Furlough saw was Despero Tilling sitting at the foot of the king. What Furlough saw was the princess touching the top of his brother's head. "Cripes!" shouted Furlough again. "Oh, cripes! He's nuts! He's a goner!" And, executing a classic scurry, Furlough went off to tell his father, Lester Tilling, the terrible, unbelievable news of what he had just seen. Chapter 6. This Drum.
"He cannot. He simply cannot be my son," Lester said. He clutched his whiskers with his front paws and shook his head from side to side in despair. "Of course he is your son," said Antoinette. "What do you mean? He is not your son. This is a ridiculous statement. Why must you always make the ridiculous statements?"
"You," said Lester, "this is your fault. The French blood in him has made him crazy."
"C'est moi," said Antoinette. "C'est moi. Why must it always be I who takes the blame? If your son is such the disappointment, it is as much your fault as mine."
"Something must be done," said Lester. He pulled on a whisker so hard that it came loose. He waved the whisker over his head. He pointed it at his wife.
"He will be the end of us all," he shouted, "sitting at the foot of a human king. Unbelievable, unthinkable."
"Oh, so dramatic," said Antoinette.
She held out one paw and studied her painted nails.
"He is a small mouse. How much of the harm can he do?"
"If there is one thing I have learned in this world," said Lester, "it is that mice must act like mice, or else there is bound to be trouble. I will call a special meeting of the Mouse Council. Together we will decide what must be done."
"Oh," said Antoinette, "you and this council of the mouse. It is a waste of the time, in my opinion."
"Don't you understand?" shouted Lester. "He must be punished. He must be brought up before the tribunal."
He pushed past her and dug furiously through a pile of paper scraps until he uncovered a thimble with a piece of leather stretched across its open end.
"Oh, please," said Antoinette.
She covered her ears.
"Not this drum of the council of the mouse."
"Yes," said Lester, "the drum."
He held it up high above his head, first to the north and then to the south, and then to the east and the west. He lowered it and turned his back to his wife and closed his eyes and took a deep breath and began to beat the drum slowly, one long beat with his tail, two staccato beats with his paws. Boom, tut, tut. Boom, tut, tut. Boom, tut, tut. The rhythm of the drum was a signal for the members of the Mouse Council. Boom. Boom, tut, tut, boom. The beating of the drum let them know that an important decision would have to be made, one that affected the safety and well-being of the entire mouse community.
Boom, tat, tat. Boom, tat, tat. Boom.
Chapter 7. A Mouse in Love. And what was our own favourite member of the mouse community doing while the sound of the Mouse Council drum echoed through the walls of the castle? Listener, I must report that Furlow had not seen the worst of it. Despero sat with the princess and the king and listened to song after song. At one point, gently, oh, so gently, the pea picked up the mouse in her hand. She cupped him in her palm and scratched his oversized ears. "You have lovely ears," the pea said to him. "They are like small pieces of velvet." Despero thought that he might faint with the pleasure of someone referring to his ears as small and lovely. He laid his tail against the pea's wrist to steady himself, and he felt the princess's pulse, the pounding of her heart, and his own heart immediately took up the rhythm of hers.
"Papa," said the pea, when the music was over, "I am going to keep this mouse. We are going to be great friends."
The king looked at Despero cupped in his daughter's hands. He narrowed his eyes.
"A mouse," he muttered. "A rodent."
"What?" said the pea.
"Put it down," the king commanded.
"No," said the pea, who was a person not at all used to being told what to do. "I mean, why should I?"
"Because I told you to."
"But why?" protested the pea.
"Because it's a mouse."
"I know. I'm the one who told you he was a mouse."
"I wasn't thinking," said the king.
"Thinking of what?"
"Your mother, the queen."
"My mother," said the pea sadly.
"Mice are rodents," said the king.
He adjusted his crown.
"They are related to rats. You know how we feel about rats. You know of our own dark history with rats."
The pea shuddered.
"But, Papa," she said, "he is not a rat. He's a mouse. There's a difference."
"Royalty," the king said, "has many responsibilities, and one of them is not becoming involved personally with even the distant relatives of one's enemies. Put him down, pea."
The princess put Despero down.
"Good girl," said the king.
And then he looked at Despero.
"Scat," he said.
Despero, however, did not scat. He sat and stared up at the princess. The king stamped his foot.
"Scat!" he shouted.
"Papa," said the princess, "please don't be mean to him."
And she began to weep. Despero, seeing her tears, broke the last of the great ancient rules of mice. He spoke to a human.
"Please," said Despero, "don't cry."
He held out his handkerchief to the princess. The pea sniffed and leaned down close to him.
"Do not speak to her," thundered the king.
Despero dropped his handkerchief. He backed away from the king.
"Rodents do not speak to princesses. We will not have this becoming a topsy-turvy, wrong-headed world. There are rules. Scat, get lost before my common sense returns, and I have you killed."
The king stamped his foot again. Despero found it alarming to have such a big foot brought down with so much force and anger so close to his own small head. He ran toward the hole in the wall. But he turned before he entered it. He turned and shouted to the princess,
"My name is Despero."
"Despero?" she cried.
"I honour you,"
shouted Despero. "I honour you" was what the knight said to the fair maiden in the story that Despero read every day in the book in the library. Despero had muttered the phrase often to himself, but he had never before this evening had occasion to use it when speaking to someone else.
"Get out of here!"
shouted the king, stamping his foot harder and then harder still, so it seemed as if the whole castle, the very world, were shaking.
"Rodents know nothing of honour."
Despero ran into the hole, and from there he looked out at the princess. She had picked up his handkerchief, and she was looking at him. Right directly into his soul.
"Despero," she said.
He saw his name on her lips.
"I honour you,"
whispered Despero.
"I honour you."
He put his paw over his heart. He bowed so low that his whiskers touched the floor. He was, alas, a mouse deeply in love. Chapter 8 To the Rats. The Mouse Council, 13 honoured mice, and one most very honoured head mouse, heeded the call of Leicester's drum, and gathered in a small secret hole off King Philip's throne room. The 14 mice sat around a piece of wood balanced on spools of thread, and listened in horror while Despereaux's father related the story of what Furlow had seen.
"At the foot of the king," said Leicester. "Her finger, right on top of his head," said Leicester. "He was looking up at her, and it was not in fear."
The Mouse Council members listened with their mouths open. They listened with their whiskers drooping and their ears flat against their heads. They listened in dismay and outrage and fear. When Leicester finished, there was a silence dismal and deep.
"Something," intoned the most very honoured head mouse, "is wrong with your son. He is not well. This goes beyond his fevers, beyond his large ears and his lack of growth. He is deeply disturbed. His behaviour endangers us all. Humans cannot be trusted. We know this to be an indisputable fact. A mouse who consorts with humans, a mouse who would sit right at the foot of a man, a mouse who would allow a human to touch him."
And here the entire Mouse Council indulged in a collective shiver of disgust.
"Cannot be trusted. That is the way of the world, our world. Fellow mice, it is my most fervent hope that Despereaux has not spoken to these humans. But obviously we can assume nothing. And this is a time to act, not wonder."
Leicester nodded his head in agreement.
And the 12 other members of the Mouse Council nodded their heads too.
"We have no choice," said the head mouse. "He must go to the dungeon." He pounded his fisted paw on the table. "He must go to the rats, immediately. Members of the council, I will now ask you to vote. Those in favour of Despereaux being sent to the dungeon, say aye."
There was a chorus of sad ayes.
"Those opposed, say nay."
Silence reigned in the room. The only noise came from Leicester. He was crying. And 13 mice, ashamed for Leicester, looked away. Listener, can you imagine your own father not voting against your being sent to a dungeon full of rats? Can you imagine him not saying one word in your defence? Despereaux's father wept, and the most very honoured head mouse beat his paw against the table again and said,
"Despereaux Tilling will appear before the mouse community. He will hear of his sins. He will be given a chance to deny them. If he does not deny them, he will be allowed to renounce them so that he may go to the dungeon with a pure heart. Despereaux Tilling is hereby called to sit with the Mouse Council."
At least Leicester had the decency to weep at his act of perfidy. Listener, do you know what perfidy means? I have a feeling you do, based on the little scene that has just unfolded here. But you should look up the word in your dictionary, just to be sure. Chapter 9 The Right Question. The Mouse Council sent Furlow to collect Despereaux. And Furlow found his brother in the library, standing on top of the great open book, his tail wrapped tightly around his feet, his small body shivering. Despereaux was reading the story out loud to himself. He was reading from the beginning, so that he could get to the end, where the reader was assured that the knight and the fair maiden lived together happily ever after. Despereaux wanted to read those words, "happily ever after." He needed to say them aloud. He needed some assurance that this feeling he had for the Princess P, this love, would come to a good end. And so he was reading the story as if it were a spell, and the words of it, spoken aloud, could make magic happen.
"See here," said Furlow out loud to himself.
He looked at his brother and then looked away.
"This is just the kind of thing I'm talking about. This is exactly the kind of thing. What's he doing here, for cripe's sake? He's not eating the paper. He's talking to the paper. It's wrong, wrong, wrong."
"Hey,"
he said to Despereaux. Despereaux kept reading.
"Hey," shouted Furlow. "Despereaux, the Mouse Council wants you."
"Pardon?"
said Despereaux. He looked up from the book.
"The Mouse Council has called you to sit with them."
"Me?"
said Despereaux.
"You."
"I'm busy right now," said Despereaux, and he bent his head again to the open book.
Furlow sighed.
"Jeez," he said. "Cripes! Nothing makes sense to this guy. Nothing. I was right to turn him in. He's sick."
Furlow crawled up the chair leg and then hopped onto the book. He sat next to Despereaux. He tapped him on the head once, twice.
"Hey," he said, "the Mouse Council isn't asking. They're telling. They're commanding. You have to come with me right now."
Despereaux turned to Furlow.
"Do you know what love is?" he said.
"Huh?
Love?"
Furlow shook his head.
"You're asking the wrong question," he said. "The question you should be asking is why the Mouse Council wants to see you."
"There is somebody who loves me," said Despereaux. "And I love her, and that is the only thing that matters to me."
"Somebody who loves you?"
"Somebody who you love? What difference does that make? What matters is that you're in a lot of trouble with the Mouse Council." "Her name," said Despereaux, "is P."
"What?"
"The person who loves me. Her name is P."
"Cripes," said Furlow. "You're missing the whole point of everything here. You're missing the point of being a mouse. You're missing the point of being called to sit with the Mouse Council. You've got to come with me. It's the law. You've been called."
Despereaux sighed. He reached out and touched the words "fair maiden" in the book. He traced them with one paw, and then he put his paw to his mouth.
"Cripes," said Furlow. "You're making a fool of yourself. Let's go."
"I honour you," whispered Despereaux. "I honour you."
And then, listener, he followed Furlow over the book and down the chair leg and across the library floor to the waiting Mouse Council. He allowed his brother to lead him to his fate. Chapter 10. Good Reasons. The entire mouse community, as instructed by the most very honoured head mouse, had gathered behind the wall of the castle ballroom. The members of the Mouse Council sat atop three bricks piled high, and spread out before them was every mouse, old and young, foolish and wise, who lived in the castle. They were all waiting for Despereaux.
"Make way," said Furlow. "Here he is. I've got him. Make way."
Furlow pushed through the crowd of mice. Despereaux clung to his brother's tail.
"There he is," the mice whispered. "There he is. He's so small. They say he was born with his eyes open."
Some of the mice pulled away from Despereaux in disgust, and others, thrill-seekers, reached out to touch him with a whisker or a paw.
"The princess put a finger on him. They say he sat at the foot of the king."
"It is simply not done,"
came the distinctive voice of Despereaux's Aunt Florence.
"Make way, make way," shouted Furlow. "I have him right here. I have Despereaux Tilling, who has been called to sit with the Mouse Council."
He led Despereaux to the front of the room.
"Honoured members of the Mouse Council," shouted Furlow, "I have brought you Despereaux Tilling, as you requested, to sit with you."
He looked over his shoulder at Despereaux.
"Let go of me,"
Furlow said. Despereaux dropped Furlow's tail. He looked up at the members of the Mouse Council. His father met his gaze and then shook his head and looked away. Despereaux turned and faced the sea of mice.
"To the dungeon," a voice cried out. "Straight to the dungeon with him."
Despereaux's head, which had been full of such delightful phrases as "happily ever after" and "lovely ears" and "I honour you," suddenly cleared.
"Straight to the dungeon,"
another voice shouted.
"Enough," said the most very honoured head mouse. "This trial will be conducted in an orderly fashion. We will act civilized."
He cleared his throat. He said to Despereaux, "Son, turn and look at me." Despereaux turned. He looked up and into the head mouse's eyes. They were dark eyes, deep and sad and frightened, and looking into them, Despereaux's heart thudded once, twice.
"Despereaux Tilling," said the head mouse.
"Yes, sir,"
said Despereaux.
"We, the 14 members of the Mouse Council, have discussed your behaviour. First, we will give you a chance to defend yourself against these rumours of your egregious acts. Did you, or did you not, sit at the foot of the human king?"
"I did," said Despereaux. "But I was listening to the music, sir. I was there to hear the song that the king was singing."
"To hear the what?"
"The song, sir. He was singing a song about the deep purple falling over sleepy garden walls."
The head mouse shook his head.
"Whatever you are talking about is beside the point. The question is this, and only this. "Did you sit at the foot of the human king?"
"I did, sir." The community of mice shifted their tails and paws and whiskers. They waited.
"And did you allow the girl human, the princess, to touch you?"
"Her name is P."
"Never mind her name. Did you allow her to touch you?"
"Yes, sir," said Despero. "I let her touch me. It felt good."
A gasp arose from the assembled mice. Despero heard his mother's voice.
"Mon Dieu, it is not the end of the world. It was a touch. What of it?"
"It is simply not done," came Aunt Florence's voice from the crowd.
"To the dungeon,"
said a mouse in the front row.
"Silence!"
roared the most very honoured head mouse.
"Silence!"
He looked down at Despero.
"Do you, Despero Tilling, understand the sacred, never-to-be-broken rules of conduct for being a mouse?"
"Yes, sir," said Despero. "I guess so.
But did you break them?"
"Yes, sir," said Despero. He raised his voice. "But I broke the rules for good reasons, because of music and because of love."
"Love!" said the head mouse. "Oh, cripes," said Furlow. "Here we go."
"I love her, sir," said Despero.
"We are not here to talk about love. This trial is not about love. This trial is about you being a mouse," shouted the most very honoured head mouse from high atop the bricks. "And not acting like one."
"Yes, sir," said Despero. "I know."
"No, I don't think that you do know. And because you do not deny the charges, you must be punished. You are to be sent, as ancient castle mouse law decrees, to the dungeon. You are being sent to the rats."
"That's right,"
shouted a mouse in the crowd.
"That's the ticket."
The dungeon. The rats. Despero's small heart sank all the way to the tip of his tail. There would be no light in the dungeon, no stained glass windows, no library, and no books. There would be no Princess P.
"But first," said the most very honoured head mouse, "we will give you the chance to renounce your actions. We will allow you to go to the dungeon with a pure heart."
"Renounce?"
"Repent. Say that you are sorry you sat at the foot of the human king. Say that you are sorry you allowed the human princess to touch you. Say that you regret these actions."
Despero felt hot, and then cold, and then hot again. Renounce her? Renounce the princess?
"Mon Dieu," shouted his mother. "Son, do not act the fool. Renounce. Repent."
"What say you, Despero Tilling?"
I say.
"No,"
whispered Despero.
"What?"
said the head mouse.
"No,"
said Despero, and this time he did not whisper the word.
"I am not sorry. I will not renounce my actions. I love her. I love the princess."
There was a bellow of collective outrage. The whole of the mouse community surged toward Despero. The mice seemed to become one angry body with hundreds of tails and thousands of whiskers and one huge, hungry mouth opening and closing and opening and closing, saying over and over and over again, "To the dungeon! To the dungeon! To the dungeon!" The words pounded through Despero's body with each beat of his heart.
"Very well," said the most very honoured head mouse. "You will die, then, with a black heart. Threadmaster," he called, "bring out the thread."
Despero marvelled at his own bravery. He admired his own defiance. And then, listener, he fainted. Chapter 11 The Threadmaster Cometh. When Despero came to, he heard the drum. His father was beating a rhythm that had much more boom and much less tat. Together, Lester and the drum produced an ominous sound that went something like this. Boom, 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 tat, boom, 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 tat.
"Make way for the thread,"
cried a mouse who was pushing a wooden spool of red thread through the crowd.
"Make way for the thread."
Boom, 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 tat, went the drum.
"To the dungeon," shouted the mice.
Despero lay on his back, blinking his eyes. How, he wondered, had things gone so terribly wrong? Wasn't it a good thing to love? In the story in the book, love was a very good thing, because the knight loved the fair maiden, he was able to rescue her. They lived happily ever after.
It said so in the book. They were the last words on the page. Happily ever after. Despero was certain that he had read exactly those words time and time again. Lying on the floor, with the drum beating and the mice shouting and the threadmaster calling out, "Make way! Make way!" Despero had a sudden chilling thought. Had some other mouse eaten the words that spoke the truth? Did the knight and the fair maiden really not live happily ever after? Listener, do you believe that there is such a thing as happily ever after? Or, like Despero, have you too begun to question the possibility of happy endings? "Happily ever after," whispered Despero. "Happily ever after," he said again, as the spool of thread came to a stop beside him. "The thread, the thread, the thread," murmured the mice.
"I'm sorry," said the mouse behind the spool, "but I have to ask you to stand up. I have to do my job."
Despero got slowly to his feet.
"On your hind legs, please," said the threadmaster. "It's the rules."
Despero stood on his hind legs.
"Thank you," said the mouse. "I appreciate it."
While Despero watched, the threadmaster unwound a length of red thread from the spool and tied a loop.
"Just enough for the neck," muttered the mouse. "No more, no less. That's what the last threadmaster taught me. Enough thread for the neck."
He looked up at Despero and then back down at the loop of thread.
"And you, my friend, have a small neck."
The threadmaster raised his arms and put them around Despero's neck. He leaned in close and Despero smelled celery. He could feel the threadmaster's breath in his ear as he worked at tightening the thread.
"Is she beautiful?" the threadmaster whispered.
"What?" said Despero.
"Shh! Is the princess beautiful?"
"The Princess P?"
"Yes."
"She is lovely beyond all imagining," said Despero.
"Just right," the threadmaster said. He drew back. He nodded his head. "A lovely princess, just so, like a fairy tale. And you love her, as a knight loves a maiden. You love her, with a courtly love, a love that is based on bravery, and courtesy, and honour, and devotion. Just so."
"How do you know that?" Despero said. "How do you know about fairy tales?"
"Shh!"
The mouse leaned in close, and Despero smelled celery again, green and alive.
"Be brave, friend," whispered the threadmaster. "Be brave for the princess."
And then he stepped back and turned and shouted,
"Fellow mice, the thread has been tied. The thread has been knotted."
A roar of approval went up from the crowd. Despero squared his shoulders. He had made a decision. He would do as the threadmaster had suggested. He would be brave for the princess. Even if... Listener, could it be true? There was no such thing as happily ever after. Chapter 12. Adieu. The sound of the drum changed again. The final tat disappeared, and it became nothing but boom, 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 boom. Lester used only his tail, bringing it down with great force and seriousness upon the drum. The threadmaster retreated. The room full of mice fell silent, expectant, waiting. And as Despero stood before them with the red thread around his neck and the 14 members of the Mouse Council perched on the bricks above him, 2 burly mice came forward. Black pieces of cloth covered their heads. There were slits for their eyes.
"We," said the bigger of the 2 mice, "will escort you to the dungeon."
"Despero!"
Antoinette called out.
"Ah, my Despero!"
Despero looked out into the crowd of mice and saw his mother. She was easy to spot. In honour of her youngest mouse being sent to the dungeon, she had put on a tremendous amount of makeup. Each of the hooded mice put a paw on Despero's shoulder.
"It's time,"
said the one on the left, the first hood. Antoinette pushed her way through the crowd.
"He is my son," she said. "I want to have a last word with my son."
Despero looked at his mother. He concentrated on standing before her without trembling. He concentrated on not being a disappointment.
"Please," said Antoinette, "what will happen to him? What will happen to my baby?"
"Mom,"
said the first hood. His voice was deep and slow.
"You don't want to know."
"I want to know.
I want to know, is my child the child of my heart, the last of my mice babies?
The hooded mice said nothing.
Tell me,
said Antoinette.
The rats, said the first. The rats, said the second.
Yes, yes, we, the rats. What of them?
The rats will eat him, said the second hood.
Ah, said Antoinette. Mon Dieu!
At the thought of being eaten by rats, Despereau forgot about being brave. He forgot about not being a disappointment. He felt himself heading into another faint. But his mother, who had an excellent sense of dramatic timing, beat him to it. She executed a beautiful, flawless swoon, landing right at Despereau's feet.
Now you've done it, said the first hood.
It doesn't matter, said the second.
Step over her. We have a job to do. Nobody's mother is going to stop us.
To the dungeon.
To the dungeon,
repeated the first hood, but his voice, so deep and certain a moment ago, now shook a tiny bit. He put a paw on Despereau and tugged him forward, and the two hoods and Despereau stepped over Antoinette. The crowd parted. The mice began again to chant, To the dungeon! To the dungeon! To the dungeon! The drumbeat continued, boom, 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 and Despereau was led away. At the last moment Antoinette came out of her faint and shouted one word to her child. That word, listener, was adieu. Do you know the definition of adieu? Don't bother with your dictionary. I will tell you. Adieu is the French word for farewell. Farewell is not the word that you would like to hear from your mother as you are being led to the dungeon by two oversized mice in black hoods. Words that you would like to hear are, take me instead. I will go to the dungeon in my son's place. There is a great deal of comfort in those words. But, listener, there is no comfort in the word farewell, even if you say it in French. Farewell is a word that, in any language, is full of sorrow. It is a word that promises absolutely nothing.
Chapter 13. Perfidy Unlimited. Together the three mice travelled down, down, down. The thread around Despereau's neck was tight. He felt as if it was choking him. He tugged at it with one paw.
Don't touch the thread, barked the second hood.
Yeah, echoed the first hood. Don't touch the thread.
They moved quickly, and whenever Despereau slowed, one of the two hoods poked him in the shoulder and told him to keep moving. They went through holes in the wall and down golden stairs. They went past rooms with doors that were closed and doors that were flung wide. The three mice travelled across marble floors and under heavy velvet drapes. They moved through warm patches of sunlight and dark pools of shade. This, thought Despereau, was the world he was leaving behind, the world that he knew and loved. And somewhere in it, the Princess P was laughing and smiling and clapping her hands to music, unaware of Despereau's fate. That he would not be able to let the princess know what had become of him seemed suddenly unbearable to the mouse.
"Would it be possible for me to have a last word with the princess?"
Despereau asked.
"A word," said the second hood. "You want a word with a human?"
"I want to tell her what has happened to me."
"Jeez," said the first hood.
He stopped and stamped a paw on the floor in frustration.
"Cripes! You can't learn, can you?"
The voice was terribly familiar to Despereau.
"Furlough," he said.
"What?"
said the first hood, irritably. Despereau shuddered. His own brother was delivering him to the dungeon. His heart stopped beating and shrunk to a small, cold, disbelieving pebble. But then, just as quickly, it leapt alive again, beating with hope.
"Furlough,"
Despereau said, and he took one of his brother's paws in his own.
"Please let me go. Please, I'm your brother."
Furlough rolled his eyes. He took his paw out of Despereau's.
"No," he said. "No way."
"Please," said Despereau.
"No," said Furlough. "Rules are rules."
Listener, do you recall the word perfidy? As our story progresses, perfidy becomes an ever more appropriate word, doesn't it? Perfidy was certainly the word that was in Despero's mind as the mice finally approached the narrow, steep stairs that led to the black hole of the dungeon. They stood, the three mice, two with hoods and one without, and contemplated the abyss before them. And then Furlough stood up on his hind legs and placed his right paw over his heart.
"For the good of the castle mice," he announced to the darkness, "we deliver this day to the dungeon a mouse in need of punishment. He is, according to the laws we have established, wearing the red thread of death."
"The red thread of death?" repeated Despero in a small voice. Wearing the red thread of death was a terrible phrase, but the mouse didn't have long to consider its implications because he was suddenly pushed from behind by the hooded mice. The push was a strong one, and it sent Despero flying down the stairs into the dungeon. As he tumbled, whisker over tail, through the darkness, there were only two words in his mind. One was perfidy, and the other word that he clung to was pee. Perfidy. Pee. Perfidy. Pee. These were the words that pinwheeled through Despero's mind as his body descended into the darkness.